Toxin by Robin Cook. Continued. Cassette 2, Side 1. Look at my hamburger, Becky said. Kim glanced at Becky's burger and saw the ribbon of pink in the middle of the meat patty, but he was preoccupied and none too happy about the call he'd just gotten from the hospital. Hmm, he said. That's the way I used to eat my hamburgers when I was your age. Really? Becky questioned. That's gross. Deciding it was best he speak directly to the intensivist himself, Kim dialed the hospital page number. That was the only way I ate my hamburgers, he said to Becky as the call went through. Medium rare, with a slice of raw onion, not with those reconstituted grilled onions, and certainly not with all that slop. The hospital page operator answered, and Kim asked for Dr. Alice Silber. He said he'd hang on. Becky looked at her burger, shrugged her shoulders, and then took another, more tentative bite. She had to admit, it tasted fine. Chapter 4. Saturday, January 17th. Kim's car rounded the bend in his street and approached his house. It was a large Tudor-style home, sited on a generous wooded lot in a comfortable suburban township. At one time, it had been an admirable house. Now it looked neglected. The previous fall, none of the leaves had been raked up, and they now covered the lawn area with a layer of wet, dirty brown debris. Most of the house's trim was badly peeling and sorely in need of paint, and some of the window shutters were awry. On the roof, a few of the slate shingles had slipped out and were angled into the gutters. It was 9 o'clock on an overcast, wintry Saturday morning. The neighborhood seemed deserted. There was no sign of life as Kim turned into his drive and pulled up to the garage door. Even the next-door neighbor's morning paper had yet to be retrieved from the front walk. The interior of Kim's house reflected the exterior. It had been mostly stripped of rugs, accessories, and furniture since Tracy had taken what she wanted when she moved out. In addition, the house hadn't been cleaned in months. The living room in particular had a dance hall feel, with only one chair, a tiny scatter rug, a side table with a telephone on it, and a single floor lamp. Kim tossed his keys onto a built-in console table in the foyer before passing through the dining room into the kitchen-family room combination. He called out Becky's name, but she didn't answer. Kim glanced into the sink. There were no soiled dishes. Having awakened a little after 5 that morning, which was his custom, Kim had gotten up and gone to the hospital to make his rounds. By the time he got home, he'd expected Becky to be up and ready to go. "Becky, you lazy bum, where are you?" Kim called out while mounting the stairs. As he crested the top, he heard Becky's bedroom door open. A moment later, Becky was standing in the doorway, still dressed in her flannel nightgown. Her hair was a dark mop of tangled curls, and her eyes were heavy-lidded. "What's going on?" Kim asked. "I thought you'd be raring to get to your skating lesson. Let's move it." "I don't feel so good," Becky said. She rubbed her eye with her knuckle. "Oh," Kim remarked. "How come? What's wrong?" "I have a stomach ache." "Well, it's nothing, I'm sure," Kim said. "Does the pain come and go, or is it steady?"
"It comes and goes," Becky said.
"Where exactly do you feel it?" Kim asked. Becky made some vague movements with her hand around her abdomen.
"Any chills?" Kim asked.
He reached out and put his hand on Becky's forehead. Becky shook her head.
"Ah, nothing but a few cramps," Kim said. "It's probably your poor stomach complaining about last night's junk food. You shower up and get dressed while I see to some breakfast for you. But snap it up. I don't want your mother complaining to me about you being late for your skating."
"I'm not hungry," Becky said. "I'm sure you will be after your shower," Kim said. "I'll see you downstairs." Back in the kitchen, Kim got out cereal, milk, and juice. Returning to the base of the stairs, he was about to call out to Becky when he could hear the unmistakable sound of the shower. Returning to the kitchen, he used the wall phone to call Ginger.
"Everybody's okay at the hospital," Kim said, as soon as Ginger answered. "All 3 post-ops are sailing along fine, although the Arnolds, particularly Gertrude Arnold, are driving me bananas."
"I'm glad," Ginger said, tartly.
"What's wrong now?" Kim asked.
He'd had another minor run-in with one of the nurses on rounds that morning, and was looking forward to a stress-free day.
"I wanted to stay over last night," Ginger said. "I don't think it is fair."
"Stop right there," Kim snapped.
"Let's not get into this again, would you please? I'm tired of this nonsense. Besides, Becky is a little under the weather this morning. What's the matter with her? Ginger asked. Her concern was genuine. Nothing much, just a stomach ache, Kim said. He was about to elaborate when he heard Becky coming down the stairs. Uh-oh, he intoned. Here she comes. Listen, meet us at the rink at the mall. Bye. As Becky came into the room, Kim hung up the phone. She was dressed in Kim's bathrobe, which was so big it dragged on the floor and the arms came down to mid-calf. There's cereal, milk, and juice on the table, Kim said. Feel any better? Becky shook her head. What do you want to eat? Nothing, Becky said. Well, you have to have something, Kim said. How about a shot of Pepto-Bismol? Becky screwed up her face into an expression of pure disgust. I'll have a little juice, she suggested. The stores in the mall were just beginning to lift their shutters to start the day as Kim and Becky made their way along the corridor toward the skating rink. Kim hadn't asked again, but he was certain Becky was feeling better. She'd ended up eating some cereal, after all, and in the car she'd been her usual talkative self. Are you going to stay while I have my lesson? Becky asked. That's the plan, Kim said. I'm looking forward to seeing that triple axel you've been telling me about. As they approached the rink, Kim handed Becky her skates that he'd been carrying. A whistle sounded, indicating the end of the preceding intermediate class. Perfect timing, Kim said. Becky sat down and started to unlace her sneakers. Kim glanced around at the other parents, mostly mothers. Suddenly he found himself locking eyes with Kelly Anderson. Despite the early morning hour, she was dressed as if she were about to go to a fashion show, and her hair looked as if she'd just emerged from a beauty salon. She smiled. Kim looked away. A young girl about Becky's age skated over and exited the rink. She sat down next to Becky and said hi. Becky returned the greeting. Ah, my favorite cardiac surgeon. Kim turned, and to his distaste, he found himself face to face with Kelly. Have you met my daughter? Kelly asked. Kim shook his head. Carolyn, say hello to Dr. Regis, Kelly said. Despite his reluctance to get into a conversation with Kelly, Kim greeted the young girl and introduced Becky to Kelly. What a delightful coincidence running into you again, Kelly said to Kim, as she straightened up from shaking hands with Becky. Did you see my segment last night on the 11 o'clock news about the hospital merger anniversary? Can't say that I did, Kim responded. Shucks, Kelly said. You would have enjoyed it. You got some good airtime, and the consensus is that your bottom line quote stole the show. It lit up the phone lines, which the station manager loves. Remind me not to talk to you again, Kim said. Careful, Dr. Regis, Kelly said happily. You'll hurt my feelings. Kim, a voice called from the other side of the rink. Kim, over here. Ginger had arrived and was enthusiastically waving as she started around the end of the rink on her way toward Kim and Kelly. She was in her early 20s, with pixie-like features, flowing blonde hair, and spidery legs. When she wasn't at the office, she made it a point to dress in her interpretation of a casual, sexy manner. That morning, she had on a tight pair of jeans, a cut-off top that exposed her narrow, firm midriff, and a workout headband and wristbands as evidence of her fondness for aerobics. On her feet were cross-trainer shoes. She wasn't wearing a coat. Oh, my, Kelly whispered while watching Ginger approach. What do we have here? I'm smelling tabloid material. The renowned cardiac surgeon and the aerobics instructor. She's my receptionist, Kim said, in an attempt to downplay the imminent confrontation. I wouldn't doubt that for a minute, Kelly said. But look at that body, and look at that girlish enthusiasm. I get the feeling she thinks you are the living end. I'm telling you, she works for me, Kim snapped. Hey, I believe you, Kelly said. And that's what interests me. Even my internist and ophthalmologist divorce their wives to marry their receptionists. I'm smelling a story here. What is this, the typical male medical midlife crisis scenario? I want you to stay away from her, Kim growled. Oh, come on, Dr. Regis, Kelly said. You cardiac surgeons think of yourselves as celebrities. This is the kind of thing that comes with the turf, especially if you date people half your age. Becky leaned over to Caroline and whispered, I'll see ya. Here comes my father's dorky girlfriend. Becky stood up, entered the rink, and quickly skated off. Ginger came straight to Kim, and before he knew what she intended, she managed to plant a forceful kiss on his cheek.
"Sorry, darling," she said. "I know I was out of sorts on the phone this morning. I was just missing you."
Not very businesslike," Kelly remarked. "Lipstick evidence." Kim used the back of his hand to wipe his cheek.
"Uh-oh,"
Ginger commented when she saw the red imprint of her lips on Kim's skin.
"Let me get it off."
Ginger licked two of her fingers, and before Kim could react again, she smeared the lipstick.
"This is perfect," Kelly commented.
Ginger turned to Kelly and immediately recognized her as a local celebrity.
"Kelly Anderson," she gushed. "What a treat. I adore you on the news."
"Why, thank you," Kelly said. "And you are?"
"Ginger Powers."
"Nice to meet you, Ginger," Kelly said.
"Let me give you one of my cards. Perhaps we could get together."
"Why, thank you," Ginger said. She took the card and smiled with true glee.
"I'd love to get together."
"Good," Kelly said. "I do a number of health-related stories, and I'm always looking for the opinions of those in the business."
"You'd want to interview me?" Ginger questioned. She was surprised and flattered.
"Why not?" Kelly said. Ginger pointed to Kim.
"He's the one you should interview, not me. He knows everything about medicine."
"Sounds like you have a high opinion of the good doctor," Kelly said. "Would that be safe to say?"
"As if there's a question," Ginger said with fake indignation.
"He's the best cardiac surgeon in the world, and he's the best looking, too." Ginger tried to tweak Kim's cheek, but this time he evaded her.
"With that, I think I'll take my leave," Kelly said. "Come on, Caroline. Let's get your coat on and get the show on the road. And Ginger, give me a call. I'm serious about talking to you.
And Kim, I can certainly understand why you have Ginger for your receptionist and companion." Kelly and Caroline walked away, with Kelly carrying her daughter's skates and backpack. Caroline was having trouble getting into her long, down-filled coat.
"She's really nice," Ginger said, watching Kelly's figure recede.
"She's a shark," Kim said, "and I don't want you talking with her."
"Why not?" Ginger said.
"She's given me nothing but grief," Kim said.
"But it would be fun," Ginger whined.
"Listen," Kim spat. "You talk to her and you're out of a job and my life. Understand?"
"All right," Ginger snapped back. "Gosh, what a grouch. What's wrong with you?"
Becky, who'd been doing some warm-up exercises, skated over to where Kim and Ginger were standing.
"I can't take a lesson," Becky said.
She stepped off the ice, sat down, and began quickly removing her skates.
"Why not?" Kim asked. "My stomach is worse," Becky said, "and I have to use the bathroom. Bad."
Chapter 5. Sunday, January 18th. Kim lifted out Harvey Arnold's hospital chart and cracked it open. It was before 8 in the morning, and the day shift nursing crew was busy having its report. Consequently, Kim had the nurse's station to himself, save for the ward clerk. He turned to the nurse's notes to read what had transpired during the previous day and during the night. He suppressed a smile. It was apparent from some of the entries that Mrs. Arnold was bothering the nursing staff as much as she bothered him. It was also apparent Mr. Arnold was doing fine. This impression was confirmed by the graphs of his vital signs, the input and output sheet, and the previous day's laboratory values. Satisfied, Kim slipped the loose-leaf chart back into its slot and walked down to his patient's room. Mr. Arnold was sitting up in his bed, eating his breakfast and watching TV. Kim silently marveled at the progress cardiac surgery had made over the last couple of decades, as evidenced by this individual. Here was a 70-year-old man who less than 48 hours previously had been gravely ill and had had open-heart surgery. His heart had literally been stopped, opened, and repaired, and yet he was already relatively happy, mostly pain-free, and enjoying a significant improvement in the quality of his life. Kim couldn't help but feel a keen disappointment that such a miracle was being devalued in the current economic environment. "How you feeling, Mr. Arnold?" Kim asked.
"Pretty good," Mr. Arnold said.
He wiped his chin with his napkin. When he was by himself, Mr. Arnold was a pleasant gentleman. It was when the husband and wife were together that the sparks began to fly. Kim interrupted his patient's breakfast long enough to check on the dressing and the amount of drainage. Everything was progressing on schedule. Are you sure I'll be able to play golf? Mr. Arnold asked.
Absolutely, Kim said. You'll be able to do whatever you want.
After a few more minutes of banter, Kim took his leave. Unfortunately, he ran into Gertrude Arnold on her way in.
There you are, doctor, Mrs. Arnold said. I'm glad I caught you. I want a private duty nurse in here around the clock, you hear?
What's the problem? Kim asked.
The problem? Mrs. Arnold echoed. I'll tell you what the problem is. The nurses on this floor are never available. Sometimes hours go by before we see one, and when Harvey rings his call button, they take their sweet time.
I imagine that's because they believe Mr. Arnold is doing well, Kim explained, and that they are devoting their time to patients who are not doing quite so well.
Now don't you start making excuses for them, Mrs. Arnold said. I want a nurse in here all the time.
I'll have someone come to talk to you about it, Kim said. Momentarily mollified, Mrs. Arnold nodded.
Don't make me wait too long.
I'll see what I can do, Kim said. Back at the nurse's station, Kim told the ward clerk to page the AmeriCare administrator and have him come up to talk to Mrs. Arnold. Kim couldn't help smiling as he waited for the elevator. He would have loved to hear the conversation that would ensue. The idea of causing the AmeriCare administrators a little grief was enormously entertaining. The elevator arrived and Kim squeezed on. It was remarkably crowded for a Sunday morning. Kim found himself pressed up against a tall, bony resident dressed in the typical whites and whose name tag read, John Markham, M.D., Pediatrics.
Excuse me, Kim said. Are there any enteric viruses making the rounds these days in school-age kids?
Not that I'm aware of, John said. We've been seeing a pretty nasty strain of the flu, but it's all respiratory. Why do you ask?
Well, my daughter's got a GI upset, Kim said.
What are the symptoms? John asked.
It started with cramps yesterday morning, Kim said, then diarrhea. I've treated her with some over-the-counter anti-diarrheal agents.
Has it helped? John asked.
I thought so at first, Kim said, but then last night the symptoms returned.
Any nausea and vomiting?
Well, some mild nausea, but no vomiting, at least not yet, but she hasn't had much appetite either.
Fever?
Nope, none at all.
Who's her pediatrician?
It was George Turner. After the merger, he was forced to leave town.
I remember Dr. Turner, John said. I rotated over to the Samaritan. He was a good man.
For sure, Kim said. He's now back in Boston at Children's Hospital.
Our loss, John said. Anyway, about your daughter. It would be my guess she's got a touch of food poisoning and not a virus.
Really? Kim questioned. I thought food poisoning generally came on like gangbusters. You know, like the proverbial staff in the picnic potato salad.
Not necessarily, John said. Food poisoning can be present in countless ways, but whatever the symptom complex, if your daughter has had acute onset diarrhea, chances are it's food poisoning. Statistically, it's the most likely cause. To give you an idea of its prevalence, the CDC estimates that there are 200 to 300 million cases a year.
The elevator stopped and John disembarked.
I hope your daughter feels better, John said as the doors closed.
Kim shook his head. He turned to another resident.
Did you hear that? 200 to 300 million cases of food poisoning every year? That's crazy.
That would mean that just about everyone in the entire country gets it each year, the resident said.
That can't be true, a nurse getting off duty said.
I think it is, another resident said. Most people take the symptoms in stride and attribute it to the stomach flu. Of course, there isn't any such thing as the stomach flu.
It seems astounding, Kim said. It makes you think twice about eating out.
People get food poisoning in their own homes just as easily, a woman from the back of the elevator said. It comes from leftovers to a large degree, although inappropriate handling of raw chicken is another major source.
Kim nodded. He had the uncomfortable feeling that everyone else on the elevator knew more about the issue than he did. When the elevator reached the ground floor, Kim got off and left the hospital. As he drove home, he couldn't help but ponder about food poisoning. He continued to marvel at the shocking idea of there being 200 to 300 million cases a year in the United States. If such a statistic were true, it seemed incredible that he'd not come across it in any of his medical reading. Kim was still mulling all this over as he came through his front door and tossed his keys on the console table in the foyer. He thought he'd get on the internet and see if he could substantiate the food poisoning statistic when he heard the sound of the TV coming from the kitchen. He walked in. Ginger was at the kitchen counter, struggling with the wall-mounted can opener. She was dressed in a spandex workout suit that left little to the imagination. Both Saturdays and Sundays, she did aerobics religiously. Becky was sprawled on the couch in the family room watching cartoons. She had a blanket drawn up around her neck. She looked slightly pale against the dark green wool. They'd spent the previous evening at home because of Becky's condition. Ginger had made a chicken dinner, of which Becky had eaten very little. After Becky had gone to bed early, Ginger had stayed over. Kim hoped they'd gotten along okay while he was at the hospital. He'd expected them still to be in bed by the time he got back from rounds. "Hello, everybody," Kim called out. "I'm home." Neither Becky nor Ginger responded. "Damn," Ginger exclaimed. "This thing is a piece of trash." "What's the trouble?" Kim asked as he stepped over to Ginger. Ginger had abandoned her efforts with the can opener and had her hands on her hips. She looked exasperated. "I can't get this can open," she said petulantly. "I'll do it," Kim said. He picked up the can, but before putting it under the opener, he looked at the label. "What is this?" he questioned. "It's chicken broth, just like it says," Ginger replied. "What are you doing with chicken broth at 9 o'clock in the morning?" Kim questioned. "It's for Becky," Ginger said. "My mother always gave me chicken broth when I had the runs." "I told her I wasn't hungry," Becky called from the couch. "My mother knew what she was doing," Ginger said. Kim put the can of broth back on the counter and walked around the central island and into the family room. When he got to the couch, he put his hand on Becky's forehead. Becky moved her head to try to keep the TV in view. "Feeling any better?" Kim asked. She felt warm, but he thought it might have been because his hand was cold. "About the same," Becky said. "And I don't want anything to eat. It makes my cramps worse." "She's got to eat," Ginger said. "She didn't eat much dinner." "If her body is telling her not to eat, she shouldn't eat," Kim said. "But she threw up," Ginger added. "Is that right, Becky?" Kim asked. Vomiting was a new symptom. "Just a little," Becky admitted. "Maybe she should be seen by a doctor," Ginger said. "And what do you think I am?" Kim responded hotly. "You know what I mean," Ginger said. "You're the best cardiac surgeon in the world, but you don't have much chance to deal with children's tummies." "Why don't you go upstairs and get me a thermometer?" Kim said to Ginger. "Where would I find it?" Ginger asked agreeably. "In the master bath," Kim said. "The top drawer on the right." "How about your cramps?" Kim asked. "I still get them," Becky admitted. "Are they any worse?" "About the same," Becky said. "They come and go." "What about your diarrhea?" Kim asked. "Do we have to talk about this?" Becky asked. "I mean, it's like embarrassing." "Okay, pumpkin," Kim said. "I'm sure you'll be feeling your old self again in a few hours. But what about eating?" "I'm not hungry," Becky said. "Okay," Kim said. "Just let me know when you want something." It was dark by the time Kim turned into Tracy Street and pulled to the curb at the base of her lawn. He got out and went around to the passenger side to open Becky's door. Becky had herself wrapped up inside a blanket so that it formed a hood over the top of her head. Kim helped his daughter out of the car and up the walkway to the front door. She'd spent the entire day on the family room couch in front of the TV. Kim rang the bell and waited. Tracy opened it and started to say hello to her daughter. She stopped in mid-sentence and frowned. "What's the blanket for?" she asked. Her eyes shot to Kim for an explanation and then back to Becky. "Come in." Becky stepped inside. Kim followed. Tracy closed the door. "What's going on?" Tracy asked. She turned back the edge of the blanket from Becky's face. "You're pale. Are you sick?" Single tears formed in the corners of Becky's eyes. Tracy saw them and immediately enveloped her daughter in a protective hug. As she did so, she locked eyes with Kim. "She's feeling a little punk," Kim admitted defensively. Tracy pushed Becky out to arm's length so she could again look at her face. Becky wiped her eyes. "You're very pale," Tracy said. "What's the matter?" "It's just a minor GI upset," Kim interjected. "Probably just a touch of food poisoning. At least, that was the opinion of a pediatric resident I spoke with." "If it's so minor, why is she so pale?" Tracy questioned. Tracy put her hand to Becky's forehead. She doesn't have a fever, Kim said. Just some cramps and diarrhea.
Have you given her anything? Tracy asked.
Sure, Kim said. She's had Pepto-Bismol, and when that didn't seem to do the trick, I gave her some Imodium.
Did it help? Tracy asked.
Some, Kim said. I have to go to the bathroom, Becky said.
Okay, dear, Tracy said. You go on upstairs. I'll be up in a minute.
Becky hoisted the edge of her blanket and hurried up the stairs. Tracy turned to Kim. Her face was flushed.
My God, Kim! You've only had her for less than 48 hours, and she's sick. What did you do with her?
Nothing out of the ordinary, Kim said.
I should have known better than to leave town, Tracy snapped.
Oh, come off it, Kim said, becoming angry himself. Becky could have gotten sick whether you left town or not. In fact, if she's got a virus, she could easily have contracted it before the weekend when you were here.
I thought you said it was food poisoning, Tracy said.
That was just a statistical guess by a pediatric resident, Kim said.
Did Ginger make food this weekend? Tracy asked.
As a matter of fact, she did, Kim said. She made a wonderful chicken dinner last night.
Chicken? Tracy exclaimed. I could have guessed. That must have been it.
So you're already blaming Ginger, Kim said mockingly. You really dislike her, don't you?
No, I don't dislike her, Tracy said. Not anymore. At this point, I'm indifferent to her.
But the fact of the matter is, she's young and undoubtedly hasn't had much experience in the kitchen. Those of us who have know that you have to be very careful with chicken.
You think you know everything, Kim said.
Well, for your information, Becky hardly touched the chicken. Besides, she'd been feeling punk since Saturday morning. That means that if she's got a touch of food poisoning, then she got it from the onion ring out on Prairie Highway, the place that your new boyfriend bragged to Becky that he owned. Tracy reached around Kim and opened the door.
Good night, Kim, she said sharply.
There's something else I'd like to say, Kim spat. I resent you implying to Becky that I'm some kind of ogre for encouraging her to compete in the nationals.
I never made a value judgment about your wishes for our daughter, Tracy said.
When Becky informed me of her reluctance to face that kind of competition, I supported her. I also told her that you might try to change your mind. That was all I said. Kim stared daggers at his former wife. The air of psychological superiority she assumed whenever they argued enraged him, especially in this instance, when she felt she had to warn their daughter about what he might say to her.
Good night, Kim, Tracy repeated.
She was still holding the door open. Kim spun on his heels and left. Chapter 6. Monday, January 19th. Kim's alarm was set to go off at 5:15 in the morning, but it was rarely needed. He usually awoke just before the alarm, which allowed him to turn it off before it could shatter the early morning peace. Kim had been getting up before dawn ever since he'd been a first-year surgical resident, and this particular morning was no exception. He climbed out of his warm bed in the pitch black and dashed stark naked into the bathroom. Following a routine that needed no thought, Kim pulled open the heavy glass door of the shower and turned on the water full blast. Kim and Tracy had always preferred showering to bathtub bathing, and the bathroom was the only room they'd wanted renovated back when he and Tracy had first purchased the house 10 years earlier. They'd had the tub pulled out, as well as its attached tiny shower stall. In their place, a generous 5-by-9-foot custom shower was constructed. 3 sides were marble slab. The 4th was half-inch glass, including the door that had vertically oriented, bright brass, U-shaped handles mounted as if they pierced the thick, tempered glass. In Kim's estimation, it was a bathing extravaganza worthy of a spread in a design magazine. Breakfast was a donut and a cup of half-milk, half-coffee that Kim stopped for at a Dunkin' Donuts shop near his home. He ate while he drove through the morning darkness. He also used the time to listen to medical tapes. By 6, he was already in his office, dictating consult letters and writing checks for various overhead expenses. At 6:45, he was in the hospital for teaching rounds with the thoracic surgery residents, at which time he made it a point to see his own patients. By 7:30, he was in the conference room for the unavoidable daily hospital meeting. That morning, it concerned hospital credentials and admitting privileges. After the administrative meeting, Kim met with the thoracic surgery fellows, whose research he supervised and participated in. That meeting went over, so he was a few minutes late to surgical grand rounds, where he presented a case of triple valve replacement. By 10 o'clock, Kim was back at his office and already behind schedule. He found out that Ginger had booked emergency patients for 9:30 and 9:45. Cheryl Constantine, Kim's office nurse, had the patients already in the two examining rooms. The morning passed with nonstop patients. Lunch consisted of a sandwich that Ginger had ordered in. Kim ate while he went over cath results and x-rays. He also found time to return a semi-emergency phone call to a Salt Lake City cardiologist about a patient who needed a triple valve replacement. The afternoon was a mirror image of the morning, with back-to-back patients, including a few emergencies that Ginger slipped into the schedule. At 4 o'clock, Kim took a short break to dash over to the hospital to handle a minor problem with one of his inpatients. While he was there, he quickly did afternoon rounds. Back at the office, Kim vainly tried to catch up, but he never could. Several hours and a number of patients later, he paused for a moment to catch his breath before pushing into what was called Examine Room A. He used the brief respite to glance at the chart. He was relieved to see it was merely a routine post-op check. That promised the visit would most likely be a quickie. The patient's name was Phil Norton, and as Kim entered the cubicle, Phil was already obligingly sitting on the examination table with his shirt off. "Congratulations, Mr. Norton," Kim said, lifting his eyes from the chart. "Your stress test is now normal."
"Thank God," Phil said.
"And thank modern-day cardiac surgery," Kim mused. He bent over and examined the incision that ran down the center of Phil's chest. Gently, Kim palpated the raised ridge of healing tissue with the tips of his fingers. By such observation and touch, Kim could accurately tell the internal state of the wound. "And the incision looks great," Kim added. He straightened up. "Well, as far as I'm concerned, you can start training for the Boston Marathon."
"I don't think that's in my future," Phil joked. "But come spring, I'll certainly be out on the links."
Kim gave the man a pat on the shoulder and then shook his hand. "Enjoy yourself," he said. "But remember to maintain the change we've made in your lifestyle."
"Don't worry about that," Phil said. "I read all the material you sent home with me, and I've taken it to heart. No more smoking for this fella."
"And don't forget the diet and exercise," Kim added.
"Don't worry," Phil said. "I don't want to go through this again."
"No, it wasn't that bad," Kim joked.
"No, but it was scary," Phil said.
Kim gave Phil another pat on the back, jotted a quick note on the chart, and left the examination room. He stepped across the hall to examine room B, but noticed there was no waiting chart in the rack on the door.
"Mr. Norton was the last patient," Cheryl said from behind Kim.
Kim turned around and smiled at his office nurse. He ran a tired hand through his tousled hair.
"Good," Kim said. "What time is it?"
"It's after 7, Cheryl said.
"Thanks for staying," Kim said.
"You're welcome," Cheryl said.
"I hope this chronic overtime doesn't cause you any trouble at home," Kim said.
"It's not a problem," Cheryl said. "I'm getting used to it, and so is my husband. He knows now to pick up my son from daycare."
Kim reversed direction and went into his private office. He collapsed into his desk chair and eyed the stack of phone messages he'd have to respond to before leaving. He rubbed his eyes. He was exhausted, yet on edge. As per usual, the stresses of the day had accumulated. He would have loved to play some tennis, and he vaguely thought about stopping in at the athletic club on his way home. Maybe he could at least use a Stairmaster. The door to his office opened, and Ginger leaned in.
"Tracy just called," she said with an edge to her voice.
"What about?" Kim asked.
"She wouldn't say," Ginger reported. "All she said was to have you call."
"Why are you upset?" Ginger exhaled and shifted her weight.
"She's just rude. I try to be nice and all. I even asked how Becky was."
"And what did she say?"
"She said just to have you call."
"Okay, thanks," Kim said. He picked up the phone and started to dial.
"I'm leaving for aerobics class," Ginger said.
With a wave, Kim acknowledged that he'd heard.
"Call me later," Ginger said.
Kim nodded. Ginger left and closed the door behind her. Then Tracy answered. "What's up?" Kim asked with no preamble.
"Becky is worse," Tracy said.
"How so?" Her cramps are worse to the point of tears, and there's blood in her diarrhea. What color? Kim asked. For Christ's sake, what do you mean, what color? Tracy demanded. Bright red or dark? Kim asked. Chartreuse, Tracy said impatiently. I'm serious, Kim said. Bright red or dark red? Almost brown?
Bright red, Tracy said.
How much?
How am I to tell? Tracy responded irritably. It's blood, and it's red, and it's scary. Isn't that enough?
It's not so abnormal to have a little blood and diarrhea, Kim said.
I don't like it, Tracy said.
What do you want me to do?
You're asking me? Tracy questioned with disbelief.
Listen, you're the doctor, not me.
Maybe I should try to call George Turner in Boston, Kim said.
And what is he going to do 1,000-plus miles away? Tracy complained. I want her seen, and I want her seen tonight.
Okay, okay, Kim said. Calm down.
Kim paused for a moment to gather his thoughts. With George gone, he didn't have any handy contacts in pediatrics. He considered having one of his internal medicine acquaintances take a peek at Becky, but was reluctant. It seemed excessive to call someone out at night because of mild diarrhea of a couple of days' duration, even if it were tinged with a small amount of bright red blood.
I'll tell you what, Kim said. Meet me over at the University Med Center emergency room.
When?
When can you be there? Kim asked.
I guess in about 30 minutes, Tracy said.
I'll see you then, Kim said.
Since he was only about 10 minutes away from the hospital, now that peak traffic time had passed, Kim used the intervening 20 minutes to return as many phone calls as he could. When he got to the emergency room, he discovered he'd still beat Tracy, so he stood out on the receiving dock and waited. While he stood there, several ambulances pulled up to the platform with their screaming sirens trailing off. Hurriedly, the EMTs unloaded a couple of patients in dire need of emergency care. One of them was being given CPR. Kim watched them disappear inside, and it made him nostalgically recall his days as a surgical resident. Kim had worked hard and had been rewarded by being told repeatedly he was one of the best residents who had ever come through the program. It had been a heady time, and in many ways more fulfilling than now. Kim was just about to use his cell phone to try to contact Tracy when he saw Tracy's Volvo station wagon round the corner and pulled to a stop. Kim dropped to the pavement and trotted over to the car as the doors were being opened. He went directly to the passenger side and helped Becky. She smiled at him weakly as she got out.
"Are you okay, Pumpkin?" Kim asked.
"My cramps are worse," Becky said.
"Well, we'll get them taken care of," Kim said.
He glanced at Tracy, who'd come around the car. Kim noticed she looked as irritated as she had the night before. Kim led the way back to the platform and up the half-dozen steps. He pushed open the swinging doors, and they entered. As the major emergency room in a large, sprawling Midwestern city, the unit was so jammed it looked like a busy urban bus station. Monday nights tended to be particularly busy because of a leftover effect from the weekend. With his arm around his daughter, Kim steered her through the throng in the anteroom, where the main admitting desk was located, and past the crowded waiting room. He was almost past the nurse's desk when an enormous Brunhild-type nurse stepped out from behind the counter. Her bulk effectively blocked Kim from proceeding any further. Her name tag read, Molly McFadden. Her height was such that she just about looked Kim in the eye.
"I'm sorry," Molly said. "You can't come in here on your own. You have to check in at the receiving desk."
Kim tried to push by, but Molly held her ground.
"Excuse me," Kim said. "I'm Dr. Regis. I'm on the staff here, and I'm bringing my daughter in to be seen."
Molly gave a short laugh.
"I don't care if you're Pope John whatever," she snorted. "Everyone, and I mean everyone, checks in at the front desk, unless they're carried in here by the EMTs."
Kim was so shocked he was rendered momentarily speechless. He could not believe that not only wasn't he being deferred to, he was being openly challenged. Kim stared disbelievingly into the woman's defiant blue eyes. She seemed as formidable as a sumo wrestler dressed in white. If she'd heard Kim identify himself as a member of the professional staff, she gave no indication whatsoever.
"The sooner you check in, doctor," Molly added, "the sooner the girl will be seen."
"You did hear me, didn't you?" Kim questioned. "I'm a senior attending in the Department of Cardiac Surgery."
"Of course I heard you, doctor," Molly said. "The question is, did you hear me?"
Kim glared at the woman, but she was not to be intimidated. Tracy sensed an impasse. Having an all-too-good idea of her former husband's temper, she took it upon herself to defuse the situation.
"Come on, dear," Tracy said to Becky. "Let's follow orders and get you checked in."
She guided Becky back the way they'd come. Kim shot one more nasty look at Molly, then turned and caught up to Tracy and Becky. Together, they joined the ragtag line of patients waiting to check in, but Kim was still fuming.
"I'm going to complain about that woman," Kim said. "She's not going to get away with that kind of insolence. The nerve! I can't believe it."
"She was only doing her job," Tracy replied, content to let the incident drop. She was relieved that Kim hadn't caused more of a scene.
"Oh, really?" Kim snapped. "Does that mean you're trying to defend her?"
"Calm down," Tracy said. "She's undoubtedly just following orders. You don't think she makes up the rules, do you?"
Kim shook his head. The line inched ahead. At the moment, there was only one clerk taking admissions. It was her job to fill out the check-in sheet with all the pertinent information, including insurance coverage if the patient was not a member of AmeriCare's health plan. Becky's face suddenly contorted in pain. Pressing her hand into her abdomen, she whimpered.
"What's the matter?" Kim asked.
"What do you think?" Tracy said. "It's another cramp."
Perspiration appeared on Becky's forehead, and she became pale. She looked pleadingly at her mother.
"It'll pass like the others, dear," Tracy said.
Tracy stroked Becky's head and then used her hand to remove the moisture from Becky's face.
"Do you want to sit down?"
Becky nodded.
"Keep our place," Tracy said to Kim.
Kim watched Tracy lead Becky over to one of the molded plastic chairs along the wall. Becky sat down. Kim could tell that Tracy was talking with her because Becky was nodding her head. Becky's color returned. A few minutes later, Tracy came back.
"How is she?" Kim asked.
"She feels better for the moment," Tracy said. Tracy noted how little the line had advanced since they'd joined it.
"Can't you think of an alternative to this?"
"It's Monday night," Kim said. "A tough night anywhere." Tracy exhaled noisily.
"I certainly miss Dr. Turner."
Kim nodded. He rose up on his tiptoes to see if he could figure out why the queue wasn't moving, but he couldn't.
"This is ridiculous," he exclaimed. "I'll be right back."
With his mouth set in a grim line, Kim skirted the people in front of him to reach the counter. Immediately, he could see why they had not moved forward. An inebriated man in a soiled and wrinkled business suit was struggling through the process of checking in. All his credit cards had fallen from his wallet. On the back of his head was an angry scalp laceration.
"Hello," Kim called out, trying to get the receptionist's attention. She was an African-American woman in her mid-20s.
"I'm Dr. Regis. I'm on staff in the Department of Cardiac Surgery. I have my..."
"Excuse me," the receptionist said, interrupting Kim. "I can only deal with one person at a time."
"Listen," Kim ordered. "I'm on the staff here."
"It doesn't matter," the woman interjected. "We're an equal opportunity server. It's first come, first served for all routine emergencies."
"Routine emergencies?" Kim questioned. It was a ridiculous oxymoron.
This book is continued at this point on the other side of this cassette. Please reverse or turn the cassette over now.